really fun guest on the show today. This one came out of nowhere. Love when these fall in our lap. Zach Schneider joins the show, played for and then coached for Ben McCollum. Hit me up and said, hey, I want to tell you why Coach McCollum's going to have the Hawkeyes as a top 10 program over the next 15 years of Big Ten basketball. I said, say no more. Let's have a chat. I think you'll really enjoy this one. Sit back, grab the popcorn, relax. Let's have a day. Let's go. Welcome into the podcast, everybody. We're just talking Nuggets Clippers. Might be the conversation today. We got a really fun guest on today. Zach Schneider joins the show. I got a message in my inbox, my DMs, a couple weeks ago. This Zach guy, he's like, hey, our daughters go to the same daycare. And I was like, oh, shit. This shows how much I pay attention. And he's like, I happen to play and coach for Ben McCollum. I might be able to provide an interesting perspective. And I was like, damn, we've had a lot of people ask or say that they could come on the pod for an episode, but I don't usually oblige. But that's hard to turn down, a guy who played for and then coached for Ben McCollum. So, Zach, welcome to the show. We're super excited today. You've got the Tiger Hawk on. So even though you're a Bearcat, you're also a Hawkeye.
That's correct. Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on and happy to share any insights with Coach McCollum and, you know, the future of Iowa basketball. I can obviously played at Northwest, but my parents, and I mentioned this to you, Tyler, grew up in Cedar Rapids. So my dad went to the U of I for 6 years and, you know, I grew up in Kansas City, but, you know, the Tiger Hawk is always kind of, you know, just I've associated with family because we'd always go back to Iowa City for football games and Cedar Rapids to see my both parents' side of the family. So, you know, been a Bearcat, like you mentioned, but also claimed the Hawkeyes, even though I didn't go to school there.
Was that the dream?
You know, it would have been nice. I was pretty, you know, realistic with my college options. I knew I was going to be below the Power Five level. And just whenever it came time to choose, you know, Northwest, I felt was the best option. A lot of that reason was just due to, you know, Coach McCollum being there and how I felt with the staff and players at the time. So, you know, I would have loved to play it at Iowa, but, you know, it just wasn't in the cards coming out of high school.
So, I mean, for anybody listening, Zach and I don't know each other. So my little bit of research for this was like, okay, let's search this guy's profile on Northwest Missouri State. Brother, 6'7", were you a shooting guard?
So you'll see this with some of Mac's offense. He plays a lot of pick and pop fours. Okay. So I rarely put the ball on the floor. My ball handling skills are well below average, but I did shoot a lot of threes, which I'm sure you saw. So,
dude, you shot so many three pointers and you averaged like nearly 45%.
Yeah, I shot it pretty well. I mean, a lot of it was Mac's teams and it began with some of the guys that I played with. Always had really elite point guards, just elite playmakers. And we'd set a ton of ball screens for them and they draw a ton of attention. So, you know, naturally his teams had to have shooting around those really elite playmakers to kind of take some of the attention off of them, create space on the floor. And I just happened to be one of those guys that was the benefit of a lot of really good players around me. And I had a pretty simple job at the end of the day is just sit out there and cast threes and, I was not shy about getting him up. So dude, I'm sure you saw that in the stat line.
So elite, man. Like, yeah. So was not a basketball player. I played, but I was not a basketball player. My mom used to describe me as just a fullback on the basketball court. Averaged a solid 5 points, 5 rebounds my senior year of high school. At the esteemed Marshalltown High.
There you go. But there you go. I'm sure you're a hell of a rebounder and defender.
Effort guy. Yep. But the one thing that I can relate to is my junior and senior year, we were just absolute grenade launchers. I mean, we just shot from all over the floor. Like 2 years in a row, I think you can go still see the stats today. Like look it up from 12, 15, God, how long was that? 12, 13 years ago. Most threes attempted in the state by any team, any class. And I think by proxy, even though we weren't a great percentage like team, we still made the most too. And it was We also lost a ton of games because we were horrible at defense and couldn't do anything else.
Sounds like you had fun while doing it, though.
It was so fun, dude. It was so fun. I when I got on there to look at your stats, and I know this isn't necessarily about you, Zach, but I want to set the stage here because and your I want to build your credibility because I was like, okay, this guy played, he coached, so maybe he's one of those guys that was like, okay, this guy was a he was a team guy, he was an effort player, became a GA. There's a lot of guys who like become coaches who are like, you know, the next level was never for them, so they were always going to be a coach or something. Dude, you came in, you didn't start the first year at Northwest, but then you started for the 3 years after that. You shot like 40%+ from three. You have the most, maybe it's been broken now, but you at the time when you left, you had the most three-pointers made in program history.
Yeah, that's correct. So like you said, I came into a really good program, and Mac, this would have been probably his fourth or fifth year. His first 2 years, I think they had a losing record. His third year, they won the conference title. And then, you know, kind of Northwest Missouri basketball, as it's known today, took off. So I was a freshman in 2013, played 20 minutes a game. We made the Sweet 16, ended up losing to the eventual national champion. And then over the course of the next few years, played a lot of minutes. And we had a, you know, really good team. Like I mentioned, really good guards around me. We won a national title, our first in program history, my senior year. And kind of my always like claim to fame in the business world, you know, just quick elevator pitch of myself. My career is my senior year. I took somewhere around 230, 240 threes, and I took 4 2-pointers. Six, seven kids.
That's awesome.
Dude, you had the best job.
I made 3 out of 4 of those twos. And, you know, I always give Mac shit, like he just never let me do anything else except stand out there and shoot threes, which once again is not the worst job in the world. But yeah, I mean, we had really good teams, you know, a lot of individual success as well. And then just stayed on with Mac a little bit just because I wasn't entirely sure what I was going to do. And we just had such a good program and culture down there in Maryville that I wanted to, you know, stay and be a part of that. So turned into 6 great careers on the staff, and certainly pumped to see what he can do at the University of Iowa.
I don't care how good of a team you had to make that many threes.
I mean,
like you were pretty good, my guy. Like that was decent. And you had at 6'7", which is just your life. Like, I know you don't know anything different, but dude, if I was 6'7", I would have been dunking so much.
Yeah, well, that was the thing. It's like, if I want to get on the floor, I had to be really good at something, and I was never going to be athletic. That was something that I just lacked. My vertical is probably, you know, I've gotten a lot more in shape over the last couple of years, but it was getting down to maybe the single digit range at one point. I mean, I'm that, you know, I cannot jump at all. I do, you know, I am able to move my feet, so I could guard and move laterally, but you know, just explosive ability was not there. So I had to, you know, once again going back to shooting, I had to figure out something to get on the floor. And you know, Mac, and this will be a common theme throughout the episode, just puts guys in a position to be efficient and play to their strengths, and that's what he was able to do with me with some really good talent around it.
You spent how many seasons as a GA, assistant coach, whatever roles that was?
Yeah, so I graduated after 4 years in the program in 17, was a GA in 18-19, assistant coach for 2 or 3 years, and then associate head for another 2 or 3 years. And then
associate
got
associate head coach.
Yeah, yeah.
Damn.
Yeah,
so. You must have been doing something right.
Yeah, I mean, we won a lot of games. So I think his mentality was probably, you know, I want to keep this guy around, keep the program rolling. So
he's humble, Grant. This guy's humble.
Kept naturally moving up the ladder. Had a few staff members move on that allowed, you know, roles above me to open up, and just put my head down, worked hard for Mac. And like I mentioned, we had just a ton of great people at Northwest and in our program. And those people played a large part in the success of our program. So it was fun to be around.
So your last year was 22, you said?
So the 22-23 season.
Okay.
And then my wife and I moved to Des Moines in the fall of 23.
And you decided to get out of coaching?
Decided to get out of coaching. Yeah, it was, you know, I knew Mac was trying to move up, had been for a couple of years, entertained a lot of different jobs, that just didn't fit the bill. Obviously found one in Drake this past season that did. And, you know, it was just time for a new challenge for me professionally. I don't think I saw myself being in the coaching profession for another 25, 30 years. And moving up and fighting to be a Division I head coach wasn't overly exciting. So I figured it was probably time to try something else and solve new problems. So that was kind of how I came. Yeah.
It's a grind of a career if you choose it. It's similar to coaching, especially if you're like trying to do it at the highest level, is
it's tough on your family as well. Not that there were just a bunch of different factors that went into it, but you know, Mac is 43 and the head coach of the University of Iowa, but he also put in 2 years as a GA Division II, was an assistant coach in Emporia, Kansas, came back 15 years at Northern. So it's a long path, like you mentioned, very long path.
What was it about, from a player perspective, you going and, you know, you're 18 years old, like what other opportunities did you have coming out of high school? And what was it about Coach McCollum when you were a kid coming out at 18 that attracted you to him and his program?
Yeah, I just had a few other local Division IIs, and at the end of the day, just being around him, you know, the recruiting process was probably 4 to 5 months for me, being around him and his staff, all former guys that played at Northwest with him or for him. It just felt like that family atmosphere that a lot of programs pitch, but you don't actually feel. When you're there, I remember going up in the spring of my senior year of high school and playing with the guys, and it just felt like a natural fit. So, you know, at the end of the day, I decided it was the best fit, hour 45 from home in Kansas City. And you know, the rest is kind of history.
You get onto his coaching staff, and what is the takeaway? Like, are you immediately like sort of enamored with the coaching side and seeing him in a different way after you just were sort of, you know, you're the player, and now the coaching role is a whole lot different? Was it cool to see your coach in a different light for then those 6 years? And what did you like, what was the new respect that you gained for him and, you know, probably opened up your mind in a lot of ways to the game of basketball and everything. But that's interesting. 'Cause I've had, you know, former teammates that played and then GA, and I've heard them describe their experience being on the other side, being in the meetings with the coaches when the players aren't there. They're like, yeah, it's a little bit weird.
They talk a lot of shit on you guys. Is what my takeaway was. But no, I mean, there's certainly a different level of respect that you see. I mean, we're around them 4 to 5 hours a day when you're in the season traveling. So you see a lot of the work that they put in. But when you're on the other side of things, sitting on that bench, you know, you just see the extra 3 hours. Okay, we just got done with the practice at 6 p.m., but now he's going back to watch another 3 hours of film just so he can prepare his guys to be the most successful. And he, you know, once again, sacrifices a lot of time with his family to put the program in the best position that they could be to compete, you know, game in and game out, and eventually for championships at the end of the season. So I would say just the unseen hours is probably the biggest takeaway from being on that side. But at the same time, like he is still the same person. Some people have a different persona up front with their players. He's that authentic person when dealing in the staff as well. And I think a lot of people respect that.
He obviously gets the Drake job and then they go crazy this year, like immediate. And then the whirlwind at the end, you know, they lose the tournament game and within 3 days, he's the Iowa head coach. What is that like from your perspective, like watching that happen? You've got to be so hype. Like, oh my God, this is just all happening for him.
Yeah, it was a really special year for a lot of reasons. I mean, one, I was really close with Max, still am. My wife and his wife are close. And then I've gotten to know his kids really well. Obviously, his daughter was born my freshman year fall. And now she's in sixth grade, which is nuts. So I know their whole family really well. They live 5 minutes north of us in Waukee. And then I played with a lot of his staff from this past year, Xavier Kurth, Bryson Williams, who are going to follow him over to Iowa. So just watching them front row and then having the four guys from Northwest, Isaiah, Bennett, Daniel, and Mitch, I coached for, you know, Bennett for 1 year and the other guys for 3 to 4 years, and recruit a lot of those guys. So to watch them have the success they did in the Valley, kind of in a way validated what we had done at Division II for so many years. You know, we had a lot of success over the last decade, and it was always just kind of like, well, yeah, I mean, but Division II, right? But to watch those guys go 31-3 in a really good mid-major league and beat Missouri at the end of the year down in Wichita was really special. And then just the whirlwind, once again, that you mentioned, like 3 days later, he's the coach at Iowa. I don't think it's really hit me. I mean, personally, it's super cool just because I've been a longtime Hawkeye fan and, you know, obviously my history with Mac, and it's, yeah, hopefully he's there for 15 to 20 years and is able to compete for national championships, but it's going to be incredible to watch.
Well, that's how you started the message, or I guess finished the message. The original DM was like, I want to tell you how I believe Coach McColl will have the Hawkeyes. And maybe it was a little bit of a pitch to like get to like, you know, try and stick out somehow to get me to bring you on, which I listened to Coach Mac in his, I'm not going to call him Coach Mac, Coach McCollum. I don't know him like that. But everybody probably calls him Mac, I'm sure.
Correct.
I listened to his opening press conference, and there's it's a little of the same when I listen to Coach Lester, the new OC for the football team. It's so fun to listen to them talk about their philosophy, and like I don't even like basketball. This is a football show. Grant gives me shit because I don't even watch football. I definitely don't watch a lot of basketball. I'll probably watch more Iowa basketball this year than I ever have.
Yeah.
But when you can listen to a coach who coaches a sport that you don't even follow and you're just dialed in, there's something there. There's something special about that. And Coach McCollum certainly fit the bill there. And you're like, I want to tell you why I think he could have them as a top 10 men's basketball program in the next 15 years. And that's a fun statement. And the goal probably for any power conference school, right, is like, hey, we're trying to be top 10, top 15, top 20 perennial tournament, you know, team that gets to the Sweet 16, makes a run every once in a while. Why in general, we'll dive deeper into it, but why does Coach Mac have what it takes to take a bunch of D2 guys and basically go into the Big Ten and win ball games?
Yeah. Well, we've only got one D2 guy left.
That's true.
Ben Sturts.
Tell me about Sturts first. I want to hear about him.
Yeah, he's a special player. Obviously, everybody got to watch him on a national level at Drake this past year. Just the combination of humility and IQ and skill all rolled up into one is, I think, what you see with him. One, his ability, just raw talent, obviously sticks out. His ability to make plays and average 20 a game at a really good mid-major and do the same against the Power Fives they played against in the tournament. But the ability to make people better as well and do it in, like, I don't know, today somebody that wins Player of the Year and, you know, averages that much in the Valley just typically has this large ego and persona about him. And I think people find it refreshing just to see how, like, low-key and down to earth he is, but still have that like killer mentality on the court. So I think people really enjoy that at the University of Iowa. And just, it's a crazy story too, because we recruited him out of Liberty High School and he kind of waited around all summer for Division I. I mean, we certainly knew he was that type of level player. I just think being on a, you know, undercover AAU team, let's call it, and maybe not having the most flashy skill set probably led him to fall to us at a Division II. And, you know, it's just crazy that his sophomore year, he was second team all MIAA. Fast forward 8 months and he's the Larry Bird Player of the Year in the NBC. But it just goes to, you know, Mac's ability to develop point guards, Bennett's work ethic, and just being a humble kid and putting his head down and working.
His, I don't know if you ever saw this. I think his girlfriend posted a TikTok of his diet too. And what he,
I haven't seen that. I don't have TikTok. You'll have to fill me in.
So like when the tournament, like maybe right after the tournament, or maybe it was in that week where they had lost and then they were waiting for the second weekend to roll around. And a TikTok pulls up and it's Bennett just like walking out of a, I don't even know. He's got like two donuts for breakfast. Yeah. And his girlfriend's like filming, and I think she just titled it like what my Division One boyfriend athlete eats in a day. Great. And it starts, and I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. And he starts his day off with like three Casey's donuts. And
good.
And the entire day was just like a, you're like, oh man.
How is this going to carry over to the Big Ten? Like this guy's competing
against like, 5 stars. But I mean, you were an athlete. Like what it's like to be a 20-year-old athlete, you know? You can just eat whatever you want. Which is funny because he never comes out of the game. Like his battery is unlimited.
He doesn't. And, you know, that's historically been how Mac operates, is like typically only plays 7, maybe 8 guys at the most. It's a testament to the players, obviously. And then just the ability to get guys in shape over the end of the summer, fall conditioning program. A lot of that credit goes to obviously the strength coaches that have worked with Mac's program, but he also has a large hand in the conditioning piece and making sure guys are in tip top shape and just kind of what he does in an everyday practice basis. So, you know, Mitch and Bennett this past year, I think led the country in minutes per game. And I think a lot of people had concerns over that and just like the ability to stay injury free. But my take on that is like, these guys are elite athletes, 20 years old, and are playing 2 basketball games a week. You know, like they get a media timeout every 4 minutes. They get plenty of breaks. I don't see any issue with it. Mac doesn't either. And I think his philosophy is like, I got a lot of really good players. I want them on the floor at all times. I think depth is fairly overrated. So that's just kind of his take on the situation.
That could be a t-shirt. Depth is overrated.
Yeah.
If that be,
keep them on the floor. Like,
I understand the, I understand the sentiment. Cause it's like, if you've got a dude,
yeah.
How can we squeeze every little bit of production out of that guy that we can? But there is such a thing as fatigue, and but then in basketball, there's almost a, you know, in football, it's a different story. You can rotate receivers in and out, tight ends, especially with Iowa, the way they've done it. Running back can be by committee, although there's a little bit of a flow aspect of that. Defensive line is a total by committee kind of thing. In basketball, there isn't that stoppage of play. So there is this flow aspect of getting in a groove, and it seems productive to be able to keep guys in there and not take them out. I know when I was playing, you know, and part of it was just ego, like, hey, I want to be in the game. I don't want to be wasting my time here. But part of it too is like, man, if you're not in the game and making passes and getting down on defense and running the floor, it's hard to stay in that flow. Is that part of it too? Is just like, you know, our system, when you're on the floor, we're trying to just get in a groove and have everybody kind of feel on the same page. And then we go from there. Everybody just is in.
Yeah. I think that's definitely 1B. I mean, 1A would just be, you want to have your best players on the floor at all times.
Sure.
And then 1B, the flow piece is a great point. I just think coaches watching basketball for 2 years, being out of it, over sub, and it really does kill that rhythm on the offensive side of the ball for some teams, where you feel like you need to get guys 8, 9, and 10 on the floor for whatever reason to keep people happy, but you over sub and you kill momentum and you get out of rhythm. And then momentum's such a big thing in the game of basketball, especially in the college landscape, that it's tough to get it back at times.
Yeah.
So I think just keeping that flow is probably the biggest reason. I mean, you'll see it a lot with him, and it'll be interesting to see how he handles it in the Big Ten and how it's officiated. But you know, with his guards and better players, he'll keep guys on the floor with 2 fouls throughout, even if they pick it up at 15 minutes left in the first half.
Yeah, he's done a couple interviews, and one of them with Lysico from Des Moines, and he somehow brought that up, and he said if a guy gets 2 fouls in the first, he's like, yeah, I'll leave him in.
Yeah,
like, I trust my guys. He did say like, you know, he referenced a couple guys he had at Northwest.
Yeah.
And he said, we had one guy who was really aggressive and like that, he was just a balls to the wall, like grind you out kind of player. We would take him out. But like a guy like Bennett, I know that 2 fouls is an outlier kind of thing. It's more often fluky than not. He's going to be smart. He can stay in the game. So that's cool. Coach Mack will have some fans on edge. Just like, oh shit, he's leaving him in. Oh man, we're going to get our guys in foul trouble.
Yeah. And it's, I felt that a lot, like as the assistant on the bench in charge of subs, like, all right, you know, if this shitty official over here, the third one on the crew, decides to make a call and Bennett's got three fouls with 10 minutes left in the first, we're going to be kind of shit out of luck. But it really never burned his teams from my perspective, and just goes back to that philosophy of keeping his best guys on the floor and keeping the flow as much as possible.
Again, I don't watch as much basketball, but I feel like what I hear about the Big Ten is it's ref pretty, like they let things go. It's pretty aggressive.
I mean, it's tough for me to judge not watching every game in the Big Ten. You get a feel for a league being in it and like competing on a night in, night out basis. And the Big Ten is widely regarded as one of the more physical leagues.
Yeah.
And it'll be interesting to see how his guys handle that physicality. I mean, Max teams have always been very physical on the defensive end. It will probably be a night by night basis thing to see how that specific crew is handling the physicality, which is going to be an interesting thing to see how he handles it. But just another challenge that he's going to have to deal with, obviously making the steps to the Big Ten.
Going back to that interesting tidbit on the substitution thing, I don't know how much women's basketball you watch or watched in the tournament. I believe it was Tennessee, the Tennessee women. They run five in, five out.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Like they will run. Like, what are the quarters? 10 minutes long. They'll run a group of five for five minutes. Five in, five out. Sub. A whole new group of five comes in for the second half of the quarter. It's wild. I was like,
that's
what?
Crazy.
Yeah, and if you practice that on a day in, day out deal, it makes sense. But you go back to the point I've been making about having your best five on the floor at all times.
Right.
How do you split up those two separate rotations?
Yeah.
And do they vary from game to game? Is it just a feel? That'd be an interesting thing.
And an extreme, obviously, but
for sure.
I mean, that seems crazy. But I guess if you got like, I mean, maybe I guess if you find yourself, you just don't have one superior stud. You just have 10 girls who are just all kind of the same level. You just run five in, five out. I mean, you're definitely getting the most fresh. You can just go balls to the wall
for sure
for 5 minutes. But it kind of seems like that's the way that Coach McCollum has his guys playing. Like he plays a really good defense. I think in the press conference or in some of the couple of these initial interviews, he's talked about, we're going to make you are going to work if you're going to get a good shot. Like we're going to take you to the end of the shot clock. I think we saw the stat about 100,000 times during the tournament. Drake, they made more shots in the last 4 seconds of the shot clock. Than any other team in the country, like 150% more than second place or something like that. So in your best way to describe it, what is Coach McCollum's overarching philosophy in the game of basketball? What does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, defensively, like you touched on first, I would say probably over the last decade, just as he's become more popular in the coaching ranks, he's probably been known for his offense throughout the media, but he will always hang his hat on the defensive side of the floor. And he'll be the first one to tell you that in his interviews. I think he mentioned it during his opening press conference as well. I mean, it's always going to be man to man. There's never going to be some junky press or zone. He just believes that that's the best way to win basketball games. And that's
no press, way. Never.
I mean, unless he's down 10 with 2 minutes to go, you know,
sure.
He'll throw it on. But I think he just, you know, you get overextended and start to give up cheap baskets. And that's kind of his philosophy. It's just going to be this very physical, pressure oriented pack in defense. Because his goal offensively is to obviously touch paint as much as possible, put pressure on the rim. And then you obviously get free throws and layups, which are the most efficient shots in the game of basketball, or kick out threes. And that's essentially what his defense is trying to prevent, is those paint touches. To where defenses have to rotate, you know, bring two to the ball, and then
you come in
scramble mode. Yeah. And then the shooters get open shots, and it just kind of, you know, flows like that. But no, I mean, defensively, it's going to be all man to man, a ton of pressure on the ball. They really don't deny passes, although they do lead a lot of their leagues in steals just because they get so active on the ball. And I think doing that really takes teams out of what they want to do defensively or offensively for the opponent. So I think you saw that a lot with Drake playing Missouri, where the SEC is just such a free flowing up and down league. and Drake and Max whole mentality in that game was for 40 minutes, you're going to have to grind out 30 second possessions in the half court. You're not going to get anything easy in transition. And a lot of teams just flat out can't run offense against that.
Yeah.
And especially when it gets to, you know, a one game season, and you're done, that pressure starts to build and you start working, you know, you've got to go against a defense that you typically don't face on a night by night basis. And I think that's where they've had a lot of success on that side of the ball. And then offensively, like I talked about, just trying to be as efficient as possible. I think this year, and you probably saw in the media, I mean, a lot of people gave them shit for playing so slow. But that was what their staff and their team felt like gave them the best chance to win a basketball game.
It was their makeup's most efficient way.
Correct. And historically, he's never played ultra fast, but slowest his teams have played, just because, you know, they probably had one to two less shooters on the floor than they prefer. And maybe were short of another ball handler than they typically have. You know, they had Bennett and Isaiah, but having a third playmaker certainly helps with the pace aspect of things. So he got a lot of shit for that. And I saw a lot of comments from like Hawkeye fans whenever he was potentially going to be hired, like, oh, this is going to be another Licklider situation. Like, no, it's not one, because they're taking really good shots. It's just at a different time of the shot clock. And this is where I find it funny. It kind of relates to Kirk Ferentz.
I was just going to say, dude, this is like, I watched the opening press conference and I tweeted it out. I was like, man, yeah. Ben McCollum is just a young KF, because we're talking clock management, and we're talking efficiency, and we're talking defense. I mean, it's like, let's go.
And I don't know if I tweeted it at you or I mentioned it in our conversation via DM, but there were multiple pictures of KF sitting in the back of that press conference, and Mac had one piece where he went off about statistics and efficiency and whatnot. And I think he was talking about, we went 38-0 in 2018-19, and we didn't win a ton of like national awards, but the NCAA sends you a statistic if you lead the country in a specific statistic, whether it be 3-point defensive percentage, whatnot. And we got obviously the win percentage one that year, because we didn't lose a game. And I just, you know, I, being a lifelong Kirk Ferentz fan, I just pictured him sitting back there smirking, because in multiple press conferences, when the media is just grilling him on points per game and offensive stats, he's sitting there, we're trying to lead the league in winning percentage, and that is it.
Oh, I don't know if you guys know, we won 38 games last year. I don't know if you guys know that.
Yeah, exactly.
The quote when he's like, if you remember right, we won 10 games last year, huh?
Yeah, is 10 games good? I mean, if you guys don't like that, then we'll certainly change what we're, dude, we're doing.
It's crazy, because we, you know, I've seen it all. My DMs are not just filled with fun requests like yours or reach outs like yours. It's filled with a lot of fans who are like, I don't fucking care if we win 10 games, man. I want to be entertained. And we're like, okay, well, here we go. Well, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, we'll chuck it down the field 40 yards every game, but we're also going to go, you know,
let's spread this thing out and go 6-6 then, baby. Let's do it.
All right.
That's like the equivalent too of like what a lot of basketball is now too. It's just like run and gun. They use none of the shot clock. It's funny, because you have to sit down and look to draw the parallels, but it's like, let's be smart about playing the game, right? Like, if they're going to give you, what's the shot clock? 30 seconds?
30 seconds.
If they're going to give you 30 seconds, why not use it all? Right? Like,
yeah. I mean, if your goal is to get the best shot possible, why does it matter if it comes at 20 seconds on the shot clock or 3 seconds on the shot clock? So, yeah. I mean, that's the most basic way to put it, but I think people get so caught up in the aesthetics of everything, and you know, we want to play super fast and score 100 a game. Well, that's probably not the best way to win for the majority of teams. Some people, the freaks in the SEC that have all the athleticism in the world, maybe.
Sure.
But you know, that's, I can tell you that probably is not going to fly in the Big Ten with how physical it is.
Tell me about a little bit more about the conditioning side of things. Basketball is interesting because, well, I mean, football too this way, but basketball specifically, there's strength conditioning component off the field where you're working in the weight room and the guys got them, you know, doing sprints or whatever. But then basketball practice, And this is how my AAU team used to do it. It's how we used to win. We had all of the slow, white, less athletic guys. But, man, we'd go to those AAU tournaments and we'd compete. And it's because we were conditioned and we could just play hard defense. We did press a lot because when you're playing AAU kids, they just get frazzled. Yeah. It's not college guys. But, man, we just won with grit. Coach McCollum talked about how he is all about strength conditioning. They're going to lift 3-4 times in season. He wants the kids' bodies to change physically. They want to the part I love the most was when he said, I want guys when they go in the game to feel like they belong first physically because they are physically able to run and body guys and take contact. You're talking to a football guy and a strength conditioning guy. So I love that shit. How did he approach that? Because then in a basketball practice, I mean, you can do a lot of basketball drills and a lot of 5-on-5 where the goal is just, hey, we're running, like we're going. And that creates a lot of adaptation for game specific. So what did that look like? And what was, you know, he talked about it. But what's his philosophy there as far as getting guys in shape?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what he does with a Big Ten strength coach specific for his team. Yeah. That's going to be interesting to see how he develops players and because we never had that at Division II, obviously. So we had a really good head strength coach, Joe Quinlan, that was in charge of our every team in our athletic department.
Yeah,
he worked with men's basketball specifically. I mean, he did a great job with the weight room. And like I mentioned earlier, Mac would handle a lot of the conditioning specific pieces.
Okay,
the fall, which for football programs would be the summer, right before your season where you're really getting after it and trying to get in the best physical shape possible, would be Mac. And we'd have, you know, 3-4 conditioning sessions a week along with practice to where not only is he trying to get you in really tip-top shape, but he's trying to challenge you mentally more than anything. And a lot of that is just these really tough running workouts. And there were a lot of them that I could think of that you just really didn't have an idea of when they were going to end. It's kind of, you know, psychotic the way he would try and do that. But you just have to attack each rep like it's your last and put everything you have into it. And then, you know, if he says it's over, it's over. If not, step up to the line. The next one, we got to attack it as well. So that's essentially his mentality. And you can obviously figure out how creative you can get with some of those crazy conditioning deals. And it's obviously different from football to where it's more you're trying to move heavy weight and that physical power. To where basketball, you've just got to be able to transition from thing to thing really fast and move up and down the floor.
Purely running.
For sure. So I think his preseason conditioning is a lot of the reason why he's able to play guys 30 plus minutes.
Has to be.
And I don't see that changing at all in the Big Ten. He's just going to have more resources for sure.
That's the exciting thing there with him is like all the things that he wants to do. He now has more money, you know, bigger facility, like all the stuff, right? Not that you would have a lot of insight into this now that you're out of it, but like it seems like they've given him a little bit more NIL. I mean, he's been able to bring in some guys. They're giving him all the stuff that he wants and needs. And specifically when the job was open and people are discussing, oh, who's going to take the job? Well, will it be this guy? You know, DeVries was the probably the other guy that I think it was reported on that Beth met with, and he was a little bit cautious, concerned about how much Iowa was going to fork over in the new world of paying guys. How many donuts can you buy with $1 million? I don't know. We'll have to ask Sturt sometime. Maybe he'll come on the show after he graduates. That's exciting. I know, God, those basketball conditioning is just rough. You just like, and you do a lot of those drills where you're just like, is coach going to call practice here, or are we just going to go again? Cause I'm going to throw up and you know, it is what it is. PTSD back to football workouts. There's a lot of ball screens, right?
Ton of ball screens. So yeah, I mean, the best way to describe his offense would be a ball screen motion. There's obviously 10 to 20 different principles within that, depending on the personnel that he has on a year by year basis that he's trying to get guys to play to. But year in, year out, it's always going to come back to ball screens, because at the end of the day, like, the name of the game and most coaches are trying to create is two defenders to the ball, so you have a 4-on-3 advantage on the backside, and then you're playing advantage basketball, and you can get the shots that you want. And he feels like ball screens, and a lot of people do feel like ball screens are the best way to create that. You know, the best thing I could compare it to, for just the casual fan, would be if you watch the Golden State Warriors on a night by night basis. You watch Steph Curry bring the ball up, and either Gary Payton Jr. like last night, or Draymond Green is setting him a ball screen. They trap Steph, two to the ball, way out there. Defense is overextended, and now Draymond has a 4-on-3 advantage, and that's where, you know, these role players get really efficient, is because they're either cutting the basket and playing to their strengths that way, or knocking down open shots. So they're going to set a lot of those, and just his unique ability to get guys to play within that system and really kind of sacrifice, you know, everybody wants to step in and average 20 a game, but getting this guy to be an elite cutter and rebounder is not easy, because they want the attention that, you know, the Bennett Sturges, the elite point guards get. But, you know, the difficult conversations behind the scenes that he has with the kids to buy in, yeah, to these programs is where I think he sets himself apart, just because I don't think a lot of coaches really want to have those difficult conversations, and they want to cater to these kids' egos. And,
yeah,
you know, he puts those conversations up front and gets that all out of the way. And that's where you see these, you know, this, what I deem to be beautiful basketball, multiple actions within a possession, and ultimately getting really efficient shots at the goal.
Sounds a lot. I'm gonna come back to it in a second. I'm about to do some fun ad reads, but it just sounds a lot more like Kirk Ferentz in the Iowa system with special teams and being a role player. Want to give a quick shout out to our sponsors. You see them down there on the screen if you're watching the YouTube. If you're not watching the YouTube, you should be. This season, Grant, myself, and Kevin, whenever he shows up, are going to be doing our Monday and Thursday episodes live on Sunday and Wednesday nights. If you're able to join, they'll be re-uploaded the next day, of course, as they have been for the last 6-7 years. But you'll be able to catch them live now, and you should be on the YouTube or Twitter, I guess. You could do it on X as well. But, you know, if you want to see Grant's lovely, interact with Grant too, you can ask him questions in the middle of the show. We can just totally interrupt things and go off the script. Solar. I saw some solar panels today, Grant.
Good.
Our neighborhood here.
Working.
Our neck of the woods, me and Zach's neck of the woods, a lot of solar out here in Waukee.
Yeah.
A lot of smart folks, a lot of smart individuals.
I believe it.
I'll just read the things.
Well, Coach, Mac now apparently is a Waukee guy, or at least for now.
Probably has solar on his house.
Probably got solar.
Yeah. He was for 9 months, but now he's headed 2 hours east.
Now he's going to Iowa City. He'll probably have solar there too. Closer over to the headquarters there, Dubuque, Cedar Rapids, Iowa City is where Eagle Point Solar has their locations. You can get in touch with them to find your solar solution. Who knows? You could be saving 50, 7,500 bucks a month. Think about what you could do. We could more daycare money, Zach. God knows we need that. Daycare is unbelievable. With longer, sunnier days ahead, people with solar do make hay while the sun is shining. The sun never turns off, by the way. Never turns off.
True.
Well, yeah. If it does, we're all fucked. So,
backed by science. All right.
Longer days in the summer, more sunlight. Solar owners are benefiting from increased energy production throughout the day into the early evening. Some solar owners even earn energy credits through net metering, or you can buy like a battery, just throw it in your basement and just have like just power. Just you need it. Storm hits, energy just sitting in your basement. Either way, there's a lot of options to design and build the right solar system for any homeowner or business. It's not just residential, agricultural, industrial, business. You got a building, you have any space. Are you a human? You can do solar. So Eagle Point is your solution there. EaglePointSolar.com. Do your solar analysis. Iowa Egg Council. I had 5 beautiful eggs this morning. I dropped one. You want to hear the irony?
Waste.
Zach will understand this. Zach, I'm sure your kid watches Bluey.
We've kept him away from the TV as much as possible. But I'm sure it's coming soon.
It's coming.
His son's watching hoops. All right, he's getting ready.
He's watching film.
He's got the Missouri Valley on.
Well, I'll tell you what, Bluey has absolute stranglehold on the entire 2 to 7-year-old market. Who knows how long it goes? We're watching an episode this morning, and in the episode, Bingo, Bluey's sister, is helping her mom make an omelet for their dad and just cracking eggs all over the kitchen. I go out, go to make my eggs. I drop an egg right on the kitchen floor. I'm like, are you kidding me? What is going on? So I wasted one of the eggs today. I'm sorry, Iowa Egg Council. Apologize, but don't worry. I grabbed another one out of the fridge. We got our 5 down, and they were delicious. Iowa Egg Council, again, later this fall, going to be doing some egg on a stick at the Iowa State Fair. A lot of egg. Tell me a week that goes by where you don't need an egg. I don't know.
For anything, no.
Yeah, there's just you need eggs. Yeah. Buy more eggs. Go get your eggs. Eat your eggs. Dude, role players, getting guys to buy in. Again, talking KF. We go. You walk into the Iowa football building. The first thing they tell you is, hey, we're going to buy into strength conditioning and special teams. You want to find your way onto the field? Kevin Ward, if you would ever show up to this show that he hosts, special teams guy, role player, ultimate role player. So it sounds like Coach McCollum sees these guys in recruiting. He has a vision for them, and he's like, and then he's trying to fill what? Basically 5 roles? I mean, you know, we have the 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. They're probably not traditional in the way that McCollum uses them. You can tell me more about that. But he sees 5 guys in an offense like, hey, I want you to do this. And then get really good at that.
Yeah, essentially. And I think it drives probably opposing coaches crazy because, like, you want to figure out why he's able to develop kids better than other people, essentially. And it is really so simple. You know, that there are, like I mentioned, 2 guys that I play with that are going to follow him over to Iowa City, Xavier Curth and Bryson Williams, that are going to be fantastic in their player development, where they will build, you know, individual skill, whether it's becoming a better ball handler or finisher just throughout their workouts. But at the end of the day, if I'm a elite rebounder and cutter freak athlete, but the offensive system has me camping out and shooting threes, I'm not going to be very good at basketball. So getting the guys to buy in to what they do best and doing that within their ball screen motion offense that everybody's comfortable with is probably where he gets guys to, you know, an all conference level more consistently than not. Now, obviously a lot of that's recruiting. Like, you have to have a certain amount of skill to get on the floor for him.
Yeah.
And I think you see that a lot. So, I mean, in terms of positions and offense, I think the 2 major ones that you're going to see consistently within his program is guys that use ball screens and guys that set them. He'd prefer the guys that use them to be really good ball handlers and decision makers. You know, the ability to shoot off a screen and also make other players better. And then the guys that set them are typically either going to be freak athletes that can set it, dive, and get to the rim really quick to put pressure on the defense, or really skilled pick and pop fours. And he's not opposed to playing 3 to 4 of those at a time. So guys that will be able to, like a Jokic, essentially, obviously not that elite of a player, but to where he can pick and pop, knock down a 3, pick and pop, drive to the rim, or if they switch the ball screen, just dive into the post and expose the mismatch there. So it's not going to ever be a traditional 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lineup, but those are the 2 types of players that I think Hawkeye fans are going to commonly see.
If Coach McCollum could get a Jokic to Iowa City,
I'd say, yeah, you had me at Jokic.
They did sign a 6'10 foreign kid.
Alfaro. Figueroa.
Pretty skilled, he looks to be.
I was going to ask, because so I think, is there a traditional 5? Like, I think what people are saying in the portal right now, because he's literally, which this is crazy. I feel like if Iowa wins any basketball games next year, it's a miracle because of what, I mean, he literally has had to build a team from scratch. I understand he brought his core from Drake, but then you got, like, you know, you got Koch, who stayed at Iowa. Then you bring in the Hassan kid from Kansas State, this kid, Figueras or Alvaro, whatever his name is. They're trying to get a guy from, somewhere else today. I just saw you're literally just piecemealing a team together. It's got to be the most difficult, hard thing to do. And then it's like, hey, everybody, we're all Iowa Hawkeyes. None of us were, but we all are now. Let's win some basketball games. And the one thing that everybody keeps saying is like, oh, we need that true five. We need a 7-footer. How does he use the big guys? You've mentioned the pick and pop four. It sounds like that's, I mean, I'd love three 6'8" to 6'9" guys who can all just throw down threes all game, all playing at the same time. Is there a traditional five that plays in this offense?
You know, if they're skilled enough to make decisions, I think there will be. If you just take a kid just from a physical, you know, he's 6'10", 250 pounds, he's going to automatically be able to play in the Big Ten. That's never going to be Max philosophy. I think you definitely need a certain level of athleticism and size to compete in the Big Ten, and he's certainly aware of that.
Defensively, but, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's going to be enough posts that you're going to have to match up with. So they probably will take more of those quote-unquote unskilled fives just to be able to have that depth of that area of the game. But, you know, if they can make a decision where, like, I'm going to go back to the Warriors, where they catch it off of a ball screen dive like Draymond Green does and can either take a bounce and finish at the rim or kick to an open shooter, then yes, I think you'll see a lot more like 6'10", 6'11 kids. But I think you're going to see it's going to be more common that you have the Cooper Cook or Koch, whatever his last name is, and the 6'10 Spaniard, to where they do have a lot of length, which will carry over to the defensive side of the ball. They might not have just the pure physical 6'10", 250 presence, but where they're 6'8", 6'10", and they can put the ball on the floor, score in the post, and also be able to stretch it with being able to shoot the three as well.
With those guys too, and it's obviously less of a – they're not going to go 40 like – Bennett is, but being able to find big guys who can buy in to the conditioning piece of it as well. And like, that's tough. Cause when you get those big guys, you know, you watch Zach Edey run up and down the floor for Purdue and you're like, my goodness, like some of these guys you're worried about they can't even stay in the game cause they're tired. Right. And I understand it's hard to lug a 7-foot body up and down a 90-foot basketball court. But is that still like, you know, with the big guys, he's still focusing on like, hey, you got to be able to manage the tempo here?
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely, you know, if they can't put the ball on the floor and they can't shoot, there's still obviously a place for them in the Big Ten. But I think the ability to get up and down the floor, one, is very important, obviously, in the game of basketball. And then two, I think the other piece that some people might miss is, how well can they move their feet side to side? Because ball screens are so present in today's game at every single level. And the people guarding those ball screens are typically the fours and the fives and the big. So
yeah,
like if they can get out there and move their feet side to side, occasionally switch onto a Big Ten guard and guard them, then yeah, we're going to see a lot of those. But if they're stiffs and, you know, they switch onto a guard and the whole defense knows this is a massive liability, once again, there's just not going to be a lot of those players on the floor, and I think they'll be able to find that.
Guard just starts licking his chops. Everyone's yelling, mismatch.
Yeah.
it's like back to the AAU tournament. Everyone's just like, exactly. Oh, this kid's about to get crushed. Talk to me about recruiting. I think one of the fun things that Coach McCollum said in his – and this is going to be – man, I guess I don't know how important – it's going to be important. It's just where you're recruiting the kids from. More often than not, at this point, it seems like it's just like maybe even more important to be able to recruit kids that are already in college coming in from the portal. But you have to recruit high school guys as well. That is a nightmare situation to figure out. I would not want to be a coach in basketball or any sport right now where the portal is a big thing. But he talked about culture, and this is another thing I love. Another Coach Ferentz staple is you don't really change kids and create a culture. You start with the culture you're trying to build, and then you find guys who already fit that and want to, and then obviously want to grow into that even more. And I mean, we've talked about on the show a million times how the coaches on Iowa football staff, they find good people who fit the values, fit the work ethic and the culture of Iowa football, and they bring them in and they'll get them to the point where they need to be football wise. Does that sound like a lot of what Coach McCollum's trying to do?
Yeah, that's generally in recruiting. Obviously, skill level is going to get you evaluated, and then they're going to do a deeper dive on your personality and character. And I think the type of kid that he wants to bring into the program looks a lot like what KF wants to do with the Iowa football program. I will say the one adjustment like Mac will have to make, and I'm sure he's going to be able to figure out, is, you know, at Northwest, we were able to recruit Kansas City, Omaha, Des Moines, that kind of little triangle in the Midwest. And we're very familiar with the type of kid that comes with that. And then at Drake, you know, they did have to rebuild a roster that had two kids out of the 13 that they eventually played with that year. So there is a bit of experience in roster turnover. But at the same time, they did bring four kids from Northwest. So it's going to be interesting to see how, and I know he's already out on the road recruiting a lot of local Iowa kids. They brought in the GRAC kid from West Des Moines, who's the player of the year this year. So there's a concerted effort to do that. And then at the same time, it's just, you're going to have to piece together a roster each year, partially through the portal. And it's just how today's game is. And you're going to have to make decisions on kids that are going to be in your program for 12 to 36 months based off probably a week of getting to know them, which is just crazy, because it used to be a year to 2 year recruiting process and you really got familiar with the kid and the family. But now, I mean, you might have to make a decision in 3 or 4 days and put a dollar amount on them and then get them to Iowa City. So, I mean, every coach is having to deal with it. I'm confident Mac will figure it out, but that's certainly going to be a major adjustment he's going to have to make.
Such a headache too, because now you're dealing with, like, you know, we've had Brad Heinrichs on the show multiple times. He's the swarm guy, and you're dealing with the collective. How much money do we have? How much the rev share is about to hit in a couple months where they're like, yeah, we also have, you know, Iowa basketball is probably going to get somewhere in the range of like $2 to $3 million there every year. It's like, what? Hey, how much money do we have? I got a guy. Want to give him some cash. Okay, I'll tell him. It's like playing Deal or No Deal. It's unbelievable. It is weird. And his recruiting area is going to open up probably a little bit more too, because when you're recruiting the Big Ten, now you're competing for guys out of Chicago. And if you can find talent, you probably take them. When you're trying to fit a culture, it might be more important there too. What was I just going to say? I completely forgot. The Coach McCollum enters year one as an Iowa Hawkeye, brand new team. There's one Cooper Koch or whatever his last name is the only guy returning. With someone like you who has a general knowledge of basketball and coaching and recruit, all these things tie together. What is success for them in year one, in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, I personally believe they're, you know, they've still got a ways to go in terms of filling out the roster. I would guess they probably want 3 to 4 more players. But I don't think in any of that staff's mind that it's like, okay, year one would be a success if we just get to 20 wins. I think it's certainly, they expect to be in the top quarter and competing for a Big Ten championship regular season. I don't think there's any reason they can't. And then, you know, they've, not at this level. Well, technically, yes, at this level, because they won a game against a Power 5 school in the NCAA tournament this year. I mean, I think they can. Their sight is set on the Sweet 16 and further. I guarantee. I haven't had personal conversations with them yet because it's been such a fresh change. But I just know the mentality of Mac and that staff, and you know, there's no excuses. This is year one. 20 wins is all we can, you know, work towards. It's going to be. Yeah, we expect to win a national title this year. I don't know if that's realistic, but. You know, every action that we put into each day and each practice is going to be geared towards that. And we're going to see where the chips fall.
He talked about that in his one of the podcasts. He's like, yeah, I just focus on winning. Like, I want to be first. And he said it. So like, I don't get not one sense of like cockiness or entitledness from when he talks about it. And when he says these things, but like, which makes it more badass, because he's like, yeah, I just want to win. I just want to be the best. And I'm like, okay, fuck yeah. Let's go. Let's go do it, coach. Come on. I'll be a water boy. Like, bring me on, which is cool. And it's so weird. I set you up with that question because who knows what success is, right? Like,
correct. Like the story he always brings up, and I forget, it was probably somebody that he played with, and it was his old coach that was holding the meeting at the time, and you know, they were doing their preseason meetings and whatnot, and they were goal setting, and it's such a funny thing in basketball. Like one kid was a junior or whatnot, said they wanted to go 25-5 this year. Like that'd be a good year. And it's like, well, which five games on your schedule do you plan on losing? You know, right. You never address it that way inside the program. And you know that being in the Iowa football program is like the expectation is to go 12-0 every year. I'm showing up to each summer workout,
yeah,
like giving it my best for that ultimate goal.
There's a disconnect there with the fans too, because it's like from a fan perspective, the blood and the sweat and tears, figuratively, literally, maybe it's not there. So at the same level, at least. And so you look at the season and, you know, we're this upcoming football season, we got Oregon, we got Penn State, Indiana, you know, some banger games on the schedule. Like, it's a tough schedule. And as a fan, you're like, oh gosh, I hope we can go maybe 9-3. 9-3 would be great. And you're like, okay. And as a fan, you can be like, yeah, we'll probably lose to Oregon. We'll probably lose to Penn State. Like, yeah. But as a player, that doesn't enter your psyche at all. You don't walk
in. No, you've got, like, if you look at it now from a football perspective, you've got 3 months to show up to workouts and practice to, like, put your best foot forward to win all three of those really tough games that we just talked about. Like, why not try and go 3-0 as opposed to 2-1?
Right.
You know, once again, just let the chips fall where they may and give your best effort every day. But
yeah, because if you take that mindset into it, you're like, well, you're beat then. You're
yeah, you've already lost one.
You lose
maybe more
because you go into this. You know, if the Iowa Hawkeyes go into the Oregon game this year, like, oh shit, we're playing Oregon. Yeah. It'd be nice if we could keep it close. Okay, well, you're maybe like you. Yeah. Okay, I guess I don't know. Anything else that I missed, Zach, that you want to touch on that Hawkeye fans should be real excited about, or why they should be excited about Coach McCollum coaching the Iowa Hawkeyes from here?
No, I don't think so. Whenever. I mean, it's just, you know, I think a lot of people saw in his opening press conference, just the, I think there's going to be another level of fan buy-in that you've seen with the football team over the last two decades with KF, and obviously the women's basketball program ever since Caitlin elevated it to the national level. I just feel like the next 15 to 20 years of Hawkeye men's basketball is going to have kind of that similar feel. Not only because they're going to put a really good product on the floor, but like Mac and his staff just have ties to the University of Iowa and the state of Iowa that I think a lot of people are going to buy into. And that is just really exciting from my perspective. Because there's been years that there's been that level of excitement with the men's program, but I think just the up and down and inconsistency is probably where there was a disconnect. And, you know, I've got a very biased opinion on the situation, but I don't think there's going to be much of that disconnect anymore. And I think they're going to be, you know, competing at a high, high level for years to come.
It's a big part of it because the whole thing was like, yeah, well, whatever Iowa basketball is right now, whether it was McCaffrey's fault or whoever you want to blame it on, there's a lot of apathy. People are just like, it's just not something there's nothing to excite me right now. I can't buy into any of this. And it seems like at least so far he's doing all the right things, and there's going to be some more butts in seats later this fall, winter, when basketball season rolls around. So, Grant, you got anything for the man?
Yeah, I'm curious. How important is the signature necktie that Coach McCollum sports? And I think this is important to me because, you know, 2020, I don't know if it was the bubble or what happened, where college coaches, NBA coaches across the board decided suits, we're done with them, and we went straight to the quarter zips. Fran had some great quarter zips, but frankly, I like it more when the coaches got the suits on. You know, I watch like the Big East and it's like, okay, Hurley's got the suit on, and then all of a sudden two titles, right? What coincidence? I don't think so. How important is the signature necktie going to be?
Yeah, I think it is just such a habit at this point that it'll never change. He has always done the basic white shirt, green tie, and black pants at Northwest since I've been there. I think I saw some pictures of his outfits early on, and there's a good reason why I changed the basic the very basic look. I will say, you mentioned during COVID a lot of the outfit across the college basketball landscape changed. I think he tried to do it one or two times. There was maybe an exhibition game over Christmas where he wore a pullover and more casual shoes, and he just looked and felt so out of place. So he did try to go the opposite direction, but just reverted back to that. And it really is just as simple as, like, I just want to make one less important decision during game day and focus my energy on the game itself. So this is just what I'm going to do. But there wasn't a ton of buy-in, honestly, at Northwest of, like, you know, you saw at Drake, they had the student section wearing it and sold a bunch of t-shirts. And I'm sure it'll get really popular at Iowa too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. There is a little bit of concern, and I think you kind of touched on it a little bit. You don't want, like, was it Sean Miller or whatever at Arizona, the famous photo where he's just, like, drenched
in sweat. Yeah, just sweating through everything.
Got to be a little bit careful of that, like, going just the white shirt, no coat or anything. But I think it'll be I might just start wearing that, like, at home even, just watch the games. I live in Texas, so I can't go to the ton of the games, but I might have to sport them.
We're just going
to
get you our shirt.
That would be nice, too, if you could just send
it. Which, by the way, if you want a – I don't even – this is how good I am at it. If you want a McCollum gold tie t-shirt, not the best design in the world. It's like second best because the university made us change it and they suck.
What did they make you change, out of curiosity?
We just wanted the block gold tie, okay? And then our little Hawks by a Million on the sleeve. And they hopped on board, which rightfully they should. You know, the Iowa official licensed Hawk shop that's under their – purview or whatever, and they came up with this design where they've got the, you know, they've got the repeating tiger hawk on there. It still looks great. You can go right now to thewashedupwalkons.com and navigate through the store tab and find this gold tie tri-blend.
Could we just get McCollum to wear this on the side?
Do you think anyone
would notice the difference?
Maybe we can get Zach to send
him on the pod. Yeah, we'll get him on the pod, and you can ask him that question.
I mean, I will certainly maybe try and exercise that that avenue at some point. Maybe after his first year, we'll bring him on, like, next off season. That'd be cool. He's got a lot of eyes on him, and I'm sure nobody more than you will be anxious to see things get going this year. Are you gonna go to some games?
Yeah, I plan to. It'll be fun to see what they release for a schedule. I know they've already got a non-conference against Xavier at home, and I'm sure they're probably going to come out with a few other good ones. But obviously,
Bring Creighton to town against
Dixon and Freeman. That'd be fantastic. Yeah, so it'll be exciting. I'll get over there, and yeah, I mean, there's going to be nobody that's more of a Iowa men's basketball fan than me now. So I'm pumped for it.
Well, Zach, we appreciate you coming on. This is much better insight than we could have cooked up ourselves. And I appreciate you reaching out because you just gave us an episode worth of content. So hope everybody listening had a fun time. A little more basketball content than we normally do this offseason because of all the McCollum hype. Maybe we'll have Zach again on sometime. Talk about we'll recap in a year. We'll just recap his first year and talk about what we've seen. We will be back again on – let's see. This is coming out on a third. We'll be back again on Monday with another episode. Till then, see ya. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you want more, you can check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube by searching Washed Up Walk-Ons. And if you're interested in supporting the show, head over to patreon.com/washedupwalkons where you can find bonus podcasts, merchandise, and other cool perks. Best part, half of your subscription benefits the kids at UI Children's Hospital. We'll see you next time. Hawks by a Million.